I bring you greetings and glad tidings from a strange and far-off place called Tarrant County. I thank you to Jen and Steve and Elena and everybody who was responsible in inviting me to come here. It has been a pleasure. According to a report from Research and Markets magazine, in 2016, Americans spent $9.9 billion towards the U.S. self-help industry. By 2022, Americans are projected to have increased that number to $13 billion. What this self-help industry has supplied them with in return have been books, productivity apps, podcasts, workshops, seminars, and retreats led by self-help gurus, all with the goal of imparting some sort of profound wisdom that will serve as an inspiration to consumers of various ways in which they can change their lives for the better. The impetus for the self-help movement comes from the Industrial Revolution and British author Samuel Smiles' 1859 book, Self-Help, which provided the namesake for the genre. Inspired by the spirit of change that the Industrial Revolution had brought about in Europe, Smiles' famous quote from the book was, "Heaven helps those who help themselves." The idea was that, once the individual became aware of their own freedom and autonomy, they were able to tap into their own potential, and the possibilities were endless. This undoubtedly had an influence on 1920s French thinker Emile Couet, who wrote the loftily titled book Self-Mastery Through Conscious Autosuggestion. The central tenet of Couet's hypothesis was the idea that positive or negative thoughts bring about positive or negative experiences, the so-called law of attraction that has become the buzzword for so many self-help books and authors. The popularity of self-help materials through the 20th century has always been as a direct response to some other widespread societal fear or concern. Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People and Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich were a response to the poverty brought on by the Great Depression and the need and desire for economic success. The newfound interest in religion and spirituality in the 1950s brought forth books such as Norman Vincent Peale's The Power of Positive Thinking and Charlie Shedd's disturbingly titled Pray Your Weight Away. Yes, that is the actual title, and as of the time I wrote this sermon, it is still for sale on Amazon. Cold War concerns over nuclear proliferation and nuclear destruction, the rise of youth unemployment, and lack of faith in conventional social structures all became things that the self-help movement used to manufacture materials to people in a vain attempt to try and help them help themselves. The self-help industry has even embraced its antithesis, anti-self-help. These include authors like Oliver Berkman and Mark Manson, the latter who was quoted as saying, "The desire for more positive experience is in itself negative experience, and paradoxically, the acceptance of one experience is itself a positive experience." The problem with the majority of self-help materials is that they are a constant attempt to change the conversation without addressing the actual underlying problem. Thinking positive thoughts and thinking that one's life can change for the better is easy if you are privileged enough to be someone who has heard throughout their lives that they are a beautiful and worthwhile individual for whom great things are possible. If you are a person who is considered to be part of one or more marginalized identities, being a person of color, identifying as a member of the LGBTQIA+ community, having a disability, or being diagnosed on the neurodivergent spectrum, among others, it is likely that you have had to spend a good part of your life, if not the majority of it, hearing from other people that you are not good enough, that you will not amount to anything worthwhile, that you do not have the same opportunities as others to make something of yourself. That your mere existence is a burden to others. These negative words have become mantras of themselves that have reinforced these ideas into the minds of people and manifested themselves as shame, anxiety, depression, and inadequacy. All of these feelings develop into trauma. And trauma is something that no amount of positive thinking from any self-help book can easily overcome. It is oftentimes so deep-seated in the minds of people that any invitation to positivity will get shot down with responses along the lines of, "Yeah, right, like that's going to do anything. That doesn't apply to me." If we are truly interested in doing the work of helping people help themselves and find a sense of inner peace, the only way that we are going to help people achieve this is empowering them to confront the feelings of shame and worthlessness that they have been forced to be subjected to. This is by no means easy work. It means delving into dark emotions which we ourselves do not want to confront or consider. It means facing unfortunate realities and unfortunate stories that are so very different from our own. It is not work for the faint of heart. But it is work that we as you use, much as we may not like to admit it, are called to do. Our first and third principles of Unitarian Universalism speak to the inherent worth and dignity of every person and acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth within our congregations. What this means is the first step in overcoming shame is accepting and truly valuing the individual for who and what they are. Our first principle is an invitation to radical hospitality. It means not placing unwritten or unspoken stipulations on the stranger that they are not fully and completely a part of the congregation until they have done a certain thing or have displayed a certain attitude. The text of the first principle is the inherent worth and dignity of every person, period. Full stop. We do not and cannot attach our own provisions, such as the inherent worth and dignity of every person provided that, or except for. The first principle is also not a simple suggestion. It is the bedrock of all that we hold sacred as UUs. To declare that we recognize the inherent worth and dignity of every person is a direct correlation to the Christian idea of Imago Dei, the image of God that is present within everyone. For those of us from marginalized communities, we have been told throughout our lives, especially in communities of faith, that our very existence goes against everything that makes up who God supposedly is. This is where feelings of shame begin to develop. We are given the unrealistic, insurmountable reality that we must change everything about ourselves in order to not be estranged from God. It is in these moments that we begin to question whether we will ever be worthy, or if it is even worth the emotional work at all. To say that we have inherent worth and dignity is to say that we have always had those aspects of the divine within us, in spite of the fact that the rest of the world wants to tell us how unworthy we are. As UUs, we are declaring to the rest of the world that we are a sanctuary, a place that is set apart, a as churches have historically been regarded, where we recognize the divine in every person. And not only the divine within ourselves, but the invitation and the opportunity to draw closer to a divine that is even bigger than our human selves. Yet seeing the divine in every person is one thing. While it is a start in the work of beginning to deconstruct shame, there is more that needs to be done. This is where our third principle comes in. Acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth within our congregations. It is one thing to notice and recognize a person as having inherent worth and dignity, but we are invited in the third principle to go deeper and accept people for who they are. This is often a challenge because it forces us to confront people who think, act, talk, and behave differently than what we are used to. It is more than simply welcoming a variety of different cultures and beliefs, as UUs often advertise and on which we pride ourselves. It is engaging with them and creating an intentional community. While this is what we aspire to do as UUs, the reality is that we do not always want to be embracing of what we are unfamiliar with and what we do not know. Human beings in general are not fans of dealing with the unknown. Yet the beauty in the intentional community that we create as UUs is that it invites all participants into an exploration of that which we hold as sacred. We get to learn from others as they articulate in their own most personal and intimate ways how they connect to something that is beyond themselves and beyond the whole world. It is in this sharing of spiritual practices and learning from each other that we find more connections to each other than we find that we have differences. Creating a sense of connection is one of the ways that we overcome shame. Shame exists as a feeling like one is or has done something to alienate themselves from others. By fostering that sense of interconnectedness, we're able to bridge those divisions that are created by feelings of shame. But yet it goes even deeper than that. Intentional community not only takes our uniqueness and diversity with regard to spiritual practices and makes it beautiful. It takes the darkest of emotions and the most painful of experiences that one has gone through, and it turns them into an asset. Although the struggles that we have gone through are often a source that feeds into our shame, our journeys, however painful they have been, have also provided us a source of perspective for how we view the world. With all of those unique perspectives comes a unique voice and a unique orientation to the world that informs how we come to understand the things that are bigger than ourselves. It is through the dialogical nature of the intentional community that we form as UUs that we create a platform for those voices to be heard and those perspectives to be seen by others, many of whom, by virtue of unintentional or unwanted privilege, have not always been able to see the other side of the coin. It is the inspiration that I draw from Nathan C. Walker's words in the reading for today. Each person that walks into a UU church, each person that takes the wild and crazy leap into the unknown and decides to join our intentional communities, serve as personal spiritual trainers to every one of us. And we get the opportunity to do the same for them. Just like Walker implores in the reading, I know that when I step through the door of any of our sacred spaces, I am coming hungry to hear you articulate your beliefs, articulate your faith to the point of having some moral relevance, to know that you are engaged in the moral issues of our time. I am even hungry to hear what makes you afraid. It may cause me to discover that you and I fear similar things, even though I may be too ashamed to admit it. Most importantly, in Walker's words, I want to know if you feel like you belong and that you feel like you matter, because you do. All of the self-help books that have been created in the past 300 years cannot make up for the value of human connection and human validation. The work of letting go of shame and finding inner peace is not one that can be done in a vacuum. It is achieved by diving into and embracing wholeheartedly the joy that is this intentional community that we create as Unitarian Universalists. So, today, I am calling for us to begin planning the funeral for shame. I recently came across a meme on Facebook, like the late millennial that I am, that had the following quote by Christian author Anne Voskamp. Shame dies when stories are told in safe places. Let me repeat that. Shame dies when stories are told in safe places. The sacred spaces of our UU worship spaces are safe places that we have created for exactly that purpose. Sharing our stories, articulating our perspectives, and allowing for each of our voices to be heard and celebrated. When we step into those spaces, we are entering into environments where shame cannot survive. We allow it to die a slow and natural death and no longer have the power over our lives that it once did. Once shame dies, we are given the chance to be reintroduced to ourselves, the beautiful, vivid, and complex creatures that we are and we always have been. It is once that relationship is formed that we open the door and make room to allow inner peace to come in, and we find the chance to be whole. Blessed be. Amen. Shalom. Assalamu alaikum. Namaste. Thank you all so much.